This is Audible.
Imagination Studio presents Star Wars Jedi Quest III: The Dangerous Games by Jude Watson. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. The space lanes of the planet Usaron were jammed with vehicles. In the upper atmosphere, large transports and sleek passenger liners chugged in orbit. 14-year-old Anakin Skywalker swerved the Galen starfighter to avoid a cruiser trying to cut into line waiting to land. "Watch it, you gravel maggot!" he yelled, even though he knew the pilot couldn't hear him. Beside him, his master, Obi-Wan Kenobi, cleared his throat. I know, Anakin said. "Feel my anger and let it go. But do I have to be a Jedi all the time? Even in space traffic?" "You are a Jedi every moment," Obi-Wan said. "Even when another cruiser is sneaking in to your right." "What?" Anakin wrenched his attention back to his piloting. A silver star cruiser was attempting to nose in. Anakin swerved to the left and then slid neatly into the empty slot ahead. Obi-Wan leaned back in his seat. "If you allowed someone to cut in line, we would lose 5 minutes' time. Would that be so bad?" "I guess not," Anakin said. Anakin saw his master's point. That was the trouble. Obi-Wan always made sense. The only problem was that Obi-Wan didn't understand how good it felt when Anakin had zoomed ahead, preventing the cruiser from cutting in. The space lane officer ahead signaled to Anakin. A new lane had opened up for landings. Anakin slid the craft neatly into place. "I knew it would be crowded on Usaron, but I didn't expect this," Anakin said. "Usaron isn't used to such traffic," Obi-Wan agreed. "Beings come from all over the galaxy to the Galactic Games." When he had first learned of the mission ahead, Anakin couldn't believe his luck. All he and his master had to do was patrol the Galactic Games, keeping alert for any signs of trouble. The Galactic Games were held every 7 years, and planets all over the galaxy competed to become the host planet. The games were exciting and sometimes dangerous, with the fastest and most skilled competing in races and contests. Anakin couldn't wait to see the various events. The government of Usaron had asked for Jedi help in order to keep the peace. In only 7 years, the galaxy had changed. New trouble spots erupted far too often. Some systems had grievances with the Senate. Some planets had trade conflicts with other planets. "Usaron is trying its best to keep things under control," Obi-Wan observed. "The leaders of the ruling power don't want anything to go wrong. They are trying to gain more power in the Senate, to be put on some very important committees. This is a crucial way to show that their planet is stable." Anakin nodded, a bit bored by senatorial politics. He was notified that he could land now on the Usaron City landing platform. He came in fast and low, executing a quick turn that dropped the starfighter into position perfectly. Anakin reached for the survival packs and activated the landing ramp, which led to the greeting center high above the capital city, Usibus. "This will be a good opportunity for you to reflect on a new Jedi lesson," Obi-Wan said. "Connection with the living force. There are beings from all over the galaxy here. You'll pick up many kinds of energies. With such a variety of beings crowded onto one planet, there is much to learn." "Yes, Master." Anakin walked out onto the landing ramp, his eyes eagerly sweeping the platform. "Are you picking up anything about the mission ahead?" Obi-Wan asked him curiously. His master often asked the question as soon as they stepped foot on a planet. Sometimes he even asked it before they landed, if he sensed that Anakin was swept by intuitions about the mission to come. Anakin reached out to the Force. Sometimes it felt so easy. The Force was there, right within his grasp, and he could fold it around himself as easily as slipping into his travel cloak. I don't feel darkness here, he said. I feel tremendous energy. It's not all good, but it isn't dark. It's just life, Obi-Wan finished. Emotion, expectation, hope, worry, excitement. They squeezed aboard a crowded turbo lift that brought them down from the greeting center to the surface of the planet. They spilled out into the main boulevard of Eusebius. Look around, Obi-Wan directed. Tell me if you see anything out of the ordinary. The ordinary? There didn't seem to be anything ordinary in Ysseron City. It was a city built entirely of plastoid materials, since there was no native stone. The buildings were brightly colored and no higher than 20 stories. Ysserons were a humanoid species with large domed heads and delicate limbs. They dressed in neutral colors, as if to offset their colorful structures. There are security officers everywhere, Anakin said. They're not in uniform, but they are patrolling. Yes. Nicely observed, Padawan, Obi-Wan said. Ysseron has the largest security force in the galaxy, for its size. The ruling power needs the security officers to keep the population under control. It is government by repression and intimidation. The ruling power is made up of 10 rulers who make all laws and decisions. The city looks peaceful and prosperous, but the ruling power has been working for years to make it look that way. So why should the Jedi help them? Anakin wondered. The ruling power is not the kind of government the Senate would normally support, Obi-Wan agreed. But the safety of many beings depends on the games proceeding well, and that is important for the continued peace of the galaxy itself. So don't forget that this mission is a serious one. There are always beings in the galaxy who use these large gatherings for their own ends. Sabotage is always a possibility, so the Jedi are needed. Are we supposed to meet with the other Jedi teams? Anakin asked. He hoped to see Truveld, a fellow Padawan, and one of his few friends at the temple. Yes, we'll need to coordinate our patrols, Obi-Wan said. Obi-Wan did not break his stride, but suddenly his concentration shifted. Anakin could see the change. Something is wrong, he murmured. Anakin threw his own attention out like a net. He was aware of a change in the sound of the crowd. A disturbance, he said. Ahead was a large square. Food stalls were packed in tightly and cafes ringed the edges. Anakin saw a knot of beings across the square. They were packed so tightly it was difficult to see what they were looking at. He heard a roar of anger. Hurry. Obi-Wan tried to make it through the crowd, but the beings were crowded so densely now that it was impossible.
Get out of my way or I'll kill you!
Someone shouted the words in Basic. Now Anakin could see a Flog, a giant being with a vibro-sword, standing over a small Ortolan, a blue-furred creature armed with only a cup of juice.
Go ahead, you tub of bantha fat,
the Ortolan sneered. This isn't good, Obi-Wan muttered. Suddenly the Flog took his vibro-sword and slashed through a small stone table. The group who had been sitting at it fell backward. One of them sprang up and withdrew a blaster. The giant Flog grabbed both huge slabs of stone and lifted them over his head.
I'll kill you all!
Frustrated, Obi-Wan tried to get through the crowd. The beings had formed a solid wall of flesh and muscle. Anakin saw a sudden flash of blue. A lightsaber danced in the air and came down, slicing expertly through the thick slabs of stone. The slabs dissolved into rocks and dust. The Flog howled as one of the stone pieces fell on his foot. That should slow you down a minute. Jedi Knight Ciri's tone was pleasant, but it rang with the shimmer of Durasteel. Next to her stood Ferris Olin, her Padawan. His lightsaber was raised and ready, his expression hard. A hush settled on the crowd. The Flog stood awkwardly, holding his foot.
Who are you?
The Ysseron, whose table had been pulverized, quickly shoved his blaster into his belt.
Ah, Jedi. Just defending myself, he muttered, backing away.
The Orderland nodded rapidly, his blue fur flying.
Easy in such crowds to bump by accident.
Exactly, Ciri said. So an apology is called for.
Sorry,
the Ortolan said quickly. By both of you, Ciri said meaningfully, her gaze boring into the Flog, who towered several meters over her blonde head. The Flog hesitated. He was not accustomed to apologizing for his temper. Ferris Olin stepped forward. Think twice, my friend, he said in a soft tone. Then, think again. Anakin saw the admiration on his master's face at the coolness of Ferris's approach. A flare of jealousy rose inside Anakin. Ferris always knew the right thing to say and the right way to say it.
Well, my fault, the Flog said in false cheerfulness. Let me buy you another juice.
He bent over the small Ortolan and led him into the cafe. Ciri deactivated her lightsaber. There, everyone is sorry. Incident over. The crowd that had been eager to witness a brawl suddenly melted away. Ciri caught sight of Obi-Wan. Just a minute too late, as usual, she said. We were just waiting to see how you'd handle it, Obi-Wan answered. Anakin watched Obi-Wan and Ciri. A stranger would never know that they were old friends. He nodded a greeting at Ferris, who nodded stiffly back. There was no need to pretend that they liked each other. Ferris had warned him once that he did not trust him and would keep an eye on him. This had infuriated Anakin, and he still wasn't over it. He turned his attention back to Ciri and Obi-Wan, who were talking in low voices. With the crowds like this, Obi-Wan was saying, it was hard to get to you at all. And where was security? Ciri asked. I saw officers all around undercover, but when they were needed, they were strangely absent. I'll talk to Liviani Sano about it, Obi-Wan said, referring to the head of the Games Council.
Anakin!
Anakin heard the cheerful voice behind him and quickly turned. True Veld was loping across the plaza next to his master, the tall and silent Rygol. True extended one long, flexible arm in a floppy wave that conveyed his excitement and happiness at seeing his friend. Rygol nodded at Obi-Wan and Ciri as they came up, but gave no verbal greeting. The three masters huddled together for a discussion, leaving the three Padawans to talk among themselves.
I can't decide, can you?
True asked Anakin, his eyes dancing. Anakin was used to True starting a conversation midway through. He lifted an eyebrow at him.
Which game events to attend?
True explained.
They all sound fun.
We're here to keep the peace, Ferris said, not to have fun. Annoyance ran through Anakin. Ferris could spoil a good mood quicker than a double Nova. True merely shook his head good-naturedly and nudged Ferris with a shoulder.
Relax, friend. I can keep the peace and watch the games too. Even our masters will allow that.
Ferris sighed.
Padawans are always trying to get me to relax, he said. I'm just not made that way.
Ciri, Rygol, and Obi-Wan turned away from their conference and approached their Padawans. We've decided that you three can go off on your own for a while, Obi-Wan told them. But be sure your comlinks are functioning at all times. Anakin and True exchanged an excited glance. They hadn't expected this good fortune. They had hoped to run into each other, but now they could actually attend at least some of the games together. Anakin would even put up with Ferris if it meant he could spend time with True. I contacted Liviani Sano. She's on her way here, Obi-Wan told them. After we receive a briefing, you'll be free to go. Then we'll all meet back at the games quarters for the evening meal. Within moments, they saw a tall female Ysaron heading toward them. She was dressed in a scarlet robe, embroidered with orange and gold threads, and her crown of braids was woven with bright jewels. Liviani Sano was not hard to spot. Traveling in her wake were three other beings, and Anakin was surprised that he knew two of them. He had met Didi and Astri when they still owned the Coruscant Cafe that Dexter Jetster now ran. He knew that they had been close to Qui-Gon Jinn and were friends with Obi-Wan as well. Didi's round brown eyes widened when he saw Obi-Wan. Astri ran forward, her pretty face flushed.
Obi-Wan!
Dark curls flying, Astri threw herself at Obi-Wan, wrapping her arms around him. Didi came up and tried to hug both of them, but his plump arms were too short. He settled for thumping Obi-Wan on the back.
This makes my eyes new and my heart glad, Didi cried.
It is so good to see you, Astri exclaimed.
It is good to see you too, Obi-Wan said. You are here to see the games?
In an official capacity, Astri said. I'd like you to meet my husband, Bogg Devinian. He's on the Games Council. Bogg, this is the great Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Bogg Devinian was a tall, handsome man in a plum fruit-colored tunic, almost as bright as Liviane Sarno's.
I am honored to meet a Jedi, Bogg said. Do you know Liviane Sarno?
This is our first meeting, Obi-Wan said with a quick nod. He introduced the Padawans. Ciri coolly assessed the council member. Rygall stood silent.
We are glad the Jedi accepted the request of the ruling power to monitor the games, Liviane said.
We can use the help.
Many more came than we expected.
We have to keep things running smoothly, Bogg added. Liviane is doing an amazing job of organization.
Liviane inclined her head in the fashion of one who was used to compliments.
If you need an insider's perspective, I'll be glad to help, Bogg added, speaking to Obi-Wan.
Because you're such a good friend of Astri's, I'll make time for you.
Obi-Wan's polite expression did not falter, but Ciri's ice-blue eyes flashed at the notion that Bogg would only help the Jedi because one of them was a personal friend.
Thank you, Obi-Wan said smoothly.
No doubt he had noticed Astri's embarrassment.
How are the preparations going? Obi-Wan asked Liviane. Any problems?
So smoothly. No problems, Bogg Devinian answered. The Games Council is handling everything beautifully. Maxo Vista is a native of Ysaron and on the council, and he has been very helpful. You know of him, of course.
Obi-Wan shook his head politely.
Anakin couldn't believe his master didn't know the great Ysaron hero who had stunned the galaxy 7 years before by winning 5 events at the Galactic Games on Baran.
But everyone knows Maxo Vista, Bogg said, surprised. He is renowned throughout the galaxy. He might not be wealthy, but he is famous. And he is a good friend of mine, so if you need an introduction.
Ciri snorted, then tried to turn it into a cough. Even Didi looked embarrassed at Bogg's bragging. He smiled at the Jedi in turn.
Who needs galactic heroes when we have Jedi?
Precisely, Liviane said crisply.
And Bogg is wrong about our not having problems. There are rumors that there will be an illegal pod race on the outskirts of the city.
Anakin suddenly became very interested.
Ciri frowned.
We had not heard this.
Liviane nodded. Pod races from all over the galaxy have been spotted arriving on Ysaron. We have heard that they are gathering on the city's northern border in the Great Dordan Caves, whose extensive tunnels are, unfortunately, ideally suited for this suicidal sport.
Pod racing is illegal in the Core Worlds, Bogg said disapprovingly. If I were senator,
I am running for senator of my home planet of Nurali, by the way,
I would consider introducing a law to outlaw pod racing galaxy-wide. It only promotes gambling and violence.
Anakin barely heard their voices. His brain had started to buzz as soon as he heard the word pod race. He hadn't seen or been in one since he was a slave on Tatooine.
Anakin felt his master's eyes on him, as though the surge of feeling had touched Obi-Wan like a warning finger. A mask of serenity dropped over Anakin's face.
He could call it up at will for times such as this, times when his blood seemed to race closer to his skin.
Liviane was speaking, and Obi-Wan turned back to her. Anakin kept his expression calm but interested, like a Jedi would be. But inside, he was a slave boy, on fire to race again.
Does he really think he's fooling me?
Obi-Wan's exasperation with his Padawan did not show on his face. Anakin's attempts to hide his excitement may have tricked the others, but Obi-Wan felt it charge the air. He had never seen Anakin compete in a pod race, and Qui-Gon had not given him any details, but he knew how outrageously dangerous pod racing was. Pilots sat in open cockpits, racing fragile crafts that were powered by massive engines tethered to the racer by flexible cables.
Obi-Wan, my friend,
Didi spoke in a low tone at his elbow.
A word?
Liviana had received a call on her comlink and had turned away, so Obi-Wan followed Didi a few paces away from the others.
"I just wanted to say," Didi began, smoothing his tunic with plump fingers, "how my entire being is convulsed with joy to see your handsome and noble face once again."
"You want a favor," Obi-Wan said flatly. Didi looked wounded.
"Not a favor, some company on a little errand."
Obi-Wan began to turn away in dismissal.
All right, the truth, a favor,"
Didi said quickly. Obi-Wan closed his eyes for a second in irritation. "Qui-Gon would ask for my patience."
"What is it?" "Shortly after arriving in Eusebus, I bought a swoop bike," Didi said. "I thought it would make navigating these crowded streets much easier. However, hardly had I gone 2 meters when the engine whoosh, kablam!"
Didi's fingers traced an explosion in the air.
"I want my money back, yet I fear that slimy son of a monkey lizard will refuse me."
"But not if a Jedi is along," Obi-Wan said wearily.
"You would not have to do a thing. Just stand there and look invincible. Maybe casually take your lightsaber out and test it."
"No, no lightsaber."
"Then your presence only."
"Do you really think," Obi-Wan said exasperated, "that I have time to help you make up a bad deal?"
"Of course not. You're so busy being strong and good," Didi said. "But while we are together, I can give you a behind-the-scenes sneak peek look at the games. Bog is my son-in-law, and on the council, I have a unique perspective."
Didi could see that Obi-Wan was unmoved.
"Now, don't do it for Qui-Gon's sake. I would never want you to remember how much he loved me and how many times he helped me. Don't even mention his beloved name."
"I don't have to," Obi-Wan said. "You just did." But Obi-Wan knew from the first moment that Didi had drawn him aside that he would help him. The truth was that Obi-Wan had a soft spot for Didi, just as vulnerable as Qui-Gon's had been. Still, there were limits. "I will give you 10 minutes, Obi-Wan said.
"You are the best and kindest friend I ever..."
9 minutes, 57 seconds. Didi's mouth snapped shut.
"I will tell Astri. One moment."
Didi dashed off, and Ciri came up next to Obi-Wan.
"You are worse than Qui-Gon," she said in an amused tone.
Obi-Wan shrugged.
"I'm still his Padawan in many ways.
Rygal and I are going with Liviani. She has some swoops available for us so we can get an overview of the area. We're sending the Padawans off on their own. The opening rituals will begin in a few minutes." When Anakin had first seen True, he had immediately wanted to spend time with him. Now, he could hardly wait to leave him behind. This wasn't True's fault. Anakin just wanted time alone to explore. About pod racing. He walked alongside Ferris and True. The streets were crowded, and they had trouble staying together.
"The opening rituals are at Stadium 1, Ferris said. "We could take an air taxi, but there don't seem to be many around."
"We can get there on Transit Yellow," True said. 4 stops. I memorized the transit system maps on the way here.
"It's the perfect opportunity for us to see all sorts of beings from all over the galaxy," Ferris said. "We should observe customs and protocol."
Leave it to Ferris to have a lesson plan for the afternoon, Anakin thought. He had more important things to do, like check out the pod racers. Of course, Obi-Wan hadn't asked him to check out the pod racers, but he had left him free to choose what he wanted to see. Anakin assured himself that he wasn't disobeying Obi-Wan by going. Still, he didn't want to advertise his plans to his fellow Padawans. He could trust True, but Ferris was another matter. It would be just like Ferris to make a big deal of it.
"I'll catch up with you later," he told Ferris and True. "I have something I need to check out first."
Disappointment clouded True's silvery eyes.
"Oh?"
Ferris gave him a glance that was more pointed.
"Obi-Wan asked you to do something?"
Anakin could not lie, not even to Ferris. He pretended he had not heard him over the noise of the crowd. He turned to go, and True leaned over and spoke softly in his ear.
"Transit Red, end of the line."
So True did know where he was headed.
"You're a good friend,"
Anakin said, as he dashed off before Ferris could say anything more. Eusebius had converted its largest air taxis to a free transit system. He found Transit Red and hopped aboard. At the last stop on Transit Red, the buildings ended abruptly.
Now what? Anakin wondered as he descended from the air taxi and looked from right to left.
He closed his eyes and summoned the Force. He felt it rise from the red dust and bound off the hills back at him. And then he felt the living Force as a wave that gathered momentum and broke over him in a shower of light.
There!
He took off toward the hills to his left. Well, if this mission was supposed to teach him about the living Force, he doubted there was much to learn. Sometimes he thought he was in better touch with the living Force than his master. Obi-Wan lived in his head. His emotions were reserved. It wasn't that Obi-Wan lacked compassion, Anakin mused. It was just that there was a little more distance between him and other living beings. Qui-Gon had not been able to pass along his connection to the living Force to his Padawan, Anakin felt. He reached the hills, which were covered with thorny green bushes and small squat trees. Anakin followed the hillside until he spotted scorch marks, then an abandoned hydrospanner. He was close. He strode forward 10 meters, pushed aside a dense covering of leaves, and found the cave opening. He walked inside, already feeling the presence of living beings. The cave opened out as he walked. Soon the ceiling soared 100 meters over his head. He heard the clang of metal, the muffled sound of shouts and curses, the whine and sputter of engines being tuned and tweaked, the roar of powerful turbines. Anakin smiled. It sounded like home. The cave opened out and he saw a makeshift pit hangar set up ahead. Pod racers were parked haphazardly, while beings of every size and description and varying degrees of oil-soaked clothing worked on them. Pit droids scuttled about, hauling huge lubricant hoses and tugging power cell chargers. Anakin recognized Aldar Beedo, a glimpse that he had raced against several times. He was surprised Beedo was still alive, let alone racing. Beedo had never been particularly skillful, but he'd been cunning and fearless and willing to cheat, and that made him more successful at pod racing than he had any right to be. Anakin noticed a pod racer mechanic nearby. He could only see a pair of short legs sticking out from underneath, while another mechanic stood near the console, pushing buttons in what appeared to be a random fashion. The two mechanics were Alina's. He recognized their three-toed feet and bluish scaly skin. The pod racer looked familiar. It had been repainted and buffed, but he was sure he recognized it. He took a couple of steps closer.
Dobie, hand me that hydrospanner, will you? I've almost got this fused. Then we can start her up again.
A hydrospanner twirled through the air, nearly taking off the tip of Anakin's nose. A hand reached up from underneath the pod racer and caught it.
Go ahead and use it, but I'm telling you, Deland, it's not the joint,
the mechanic at the console said.
No chance, never ever. If the engine overheats during gear switches, it's gotta be a sensor problem. But the sensor doesn't show a problem, Blopehead. That's the problem, Bantha Breath. If you just let me finish checking out the sensor suite. I've been doing this longer than you have, baby brother, so slap your flapping lips shut. You're only 14 months older. 14 and a half. And I'm the pilot. You're the mechanic. My point exact. Got it.
A face stained with grease appeared in a pair of grimy welding goggles. Deland sprang to his feet in one motion.
Let's fire her up.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, Anakin said. Dobie and Deland peered at him from behind their goggles.
And we should listen to you because?
Deland asked. Anakin took a step closer. Because if your engine is overheating during gear changes, the problem could be in the current filter. Have you used an impulse detector?
Not that it's your business, but yes, Dobie said. It didn't show anything wrong.
Then it's definitely the current filter, Anakin said. It's clogged.
Slap it shut, you son of a durkey.
Deland warned his brother.
This guy could be working for another pod racer. He's just trying to spook us.
Dobie leaned toward his brother and said in a whisper,
Haven't you noticed? He's a Jedi. He's a fraud and a fake, Deland hissed. Sebulba probably hired him.
Anakin felt a rush of heat that made his face flame. Back on Tatooine, Sebulba the Dug had tried to cheat his way to victory in the Bunta Eve race and nearly killed Anakin in the process. Sebulba is still racing?
Everybody knows that, Deland said. Now I know you're lying. Dobby, fire up that engine.
You're going to blow out the intake valves on the turbines, Anakin warned. In answer, Deelan reached over and flipped on the engine. Anakin had already stepped out of the way. A loud explosion blew Deelan back onto the ground. Anakin reached over and shut off the engine.
I'll be a Kowakian monkey lizard, Dobby cried. You were right.
Deelan picked himself up and dusted off his leggings.
Lucky guess.
Are you two related to Rats Tyrell? Anakin asked curiously. I think I recognize this pod racer. Dobby nodded proudly.
He was our father. He died in the great Bunta Eve Classic 6 years ago. Did you know him?
I raced against him in that race, Anakin said.
Lying again, Deelan said to Anakin. No human can be a pod racer. One was, Dobby said, a human child, a slave. He won his freedom, and after the race he disappeared. His name was...
Anakin Skywalker, Anakin supplied. Pleased to meet you.
Now you're a Jedi?
Dobby asked in disbelief.
And you were a slave.
It's a strange galaxy, Anakin said with a grin.
Don't want to interrupt this getting to know you gush, but we have a job to do, Deelan said gruffly.
I'll help you if you want, Anakin said spontaneously.
What's in it for you?
Deelan asked suspiciously.
Who cares? Dobby asked. He beat Sebulba, Deelan. Now we have to.
He turned to Anakin.
After our father died, we had no money, so our uncle sold our sister into slavery. Jella's master is now Sebulba. We have to get her out of his clutches. We bet our pod racer that we'd win. Sebulba bet Jella's freedom. This time, though, he's not racing. His son Hekula is.
I'm sorry that your sister is a slave, Anakin said. Do you know Shmi? My mother? She's a slave too, or she was when I saw her last. Dobby shook his head.
Mos Espa's full of beings. We don't know them all.
Anakin blinked as tears filled his eyes, surprising him. For a moment, Shmi had seemed so close, but she was as far away as she always was. He turned away quickly, his gaze roaming around the makeshift hangar. He didn't see Sebulba, but he did see something familiar. His old pod racer. Could it be? Whose pod racer is that? He asked, pointing it out.
Hekulus,
Deelan said, giving it a glance. Yes, it was definitely Anakin's old pod racer, a customized Radon Ulzer. It had been painted and retooled, but he would recognize it anywhere. He knew Qui-Gon had sold the pod racer, but not to whom. Sebulba must have bought it. A tall young Dug suddenly moved into Anakin's field of vision.
What are you looking at, spy?
He shouted. What I look at is not your concern, Anakin shot back.
When it's my pod racer, it is.
The Dug hissed back.
Spy!
It's Hekula,
Dobby warned Anakin in a whisper.
Be careful.
Anakin looked at Sebulba's son carefully. He felt the dark side of the Force shimmer off him. He had taken after his father, that was clear. A movement caught his eye. Another Dug had scuttled across the distance toward him. Anakin found himself face to face with his old enemy, Sebulba. Anakin's fingers itched for his lightsaber. But he saw immediately that Sebulba didn't recognize him. His gaze was hostile, but the hostility wasn't personal. Anakin smiled again. The smile infuriated Sebulba.
What are you smiling at? And how dare you bully my son? He wasn't bullying me, father.
Hekula whined in Huttese.
I am bullying him.
You were doing a very poor job of it, Anakin answered in Huttese. But that doesn't surprise me.
How dare you?
Sebulba roared.
Prepare to die.
Deelan quickly moved between them.
Who's talking about dying? He said in a jovial tone. Let's save that for the pod race. Right, Hekula? I'd worry about crashing more than spies if I were you. I've seen you race.
Hekula's long head thrust toward Deelan.
You'll choke on my dust, son of a rat.
Sebulba was more clever than his son. He grinned craftily and shot a look at Jella, who was standing by Hakula's pod racer, preparing a snack for the two Dugs.
I hope you're alive to see your sister wipe the floor under our feet for the next 50 years.
Anakin and Deland both tensed, ready to strike. Dobby grabbed the hems of Anakin's and Deland's tunics.
Just let them go, he murmured. We'll win the race. That is our better best revenge.
Anakin saw Deland's hand clench and unclench. His own fingertips burned to slip his lightsaber from its sheath.
Let's leave the cowards to their play,
Sebulba sneered. He and Hakula slithered off, their footfalls clattering on the stony ground. You can beat him. The certainty in Anakin's voice made the two brothers turn to face him. With my help. Hakula has my old pod racer. I built it with my own hands. They may have painted it and buffed it, but I still know those engines. I know its weaknesses. I know how Sebulba cheats. I can help you win. Dobby and Deland exchanged a glance.
We can't ask you to do that, Deland said.
You're not asking.
We can't pay you, Dobby said. All of our credits are tied up in the pod racer. We barely have enough to get home.
I don't need credits, and I don't need thanks, Anakin said. I just need you to win. So you promised me inside information, Obi-Wan said to Didi. They could not locate an air taxi, and all the transits were full, so they had to walk to the swoop cellar.
My son-in-law is an idiot.
That's not exactly the kind of information I had in mind, Obi-Wan said mildly. Didi sighed.
You'd think Astri would have more sense. Did I raise her to fall for the first tall, handsome idiot who walked through my door? I did not.
Well, at least he's not a criminal, Obi-Wan said.
Bog thinks that by serving on the council for the games, he'll get the backing of some important beings in the Senate, and that he'll be assigned important committee assignments. All he does is talk about how important his role is and what it will mean for his future.
Didi mimicked a snore.
Honestly, I don't know how Astri stands it. His big job has been arranging the seating for some big-shot senators. Who diggity who?
Didi, you said you had information, Obi-Wan said. This is complaining.
I've plenty of information, Didi said. How can I not? Bog never stops talking. He never says anything worth listening to. Ha-ha! Look, here we are.
Didi paused in front of a shop with closed Durasteel shutters. It doesn't look open, Obi-Wan observed.
It's a very exclusive shop.
Didi turned to him.
Remember, you don't have to say anything. Just stand there and give that Jedi-ish look.
I think I can manage it, Obi-Wan said dryly. Didi rapped a rhythmic knock on the door. Several seconds later, the door slid open. Obi-Wan realized that the pause of the few seconds meant that they had just undergone some sort of security check. But the security measure seemed excessive for a swoop cellar. Obi-Wan stepped into the dim interior, fully aware that Didi could be leading him into his usual swamp of deception. Didi didn't so much lie as leave crucial pieces of information out. You owe me one, Qui-Gon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon,
Didi said to a massive creature who suddenly loomed out of the shadows in the shop. The being was 2 meters taller than Obi-Wan. Each 15-fingered hand was the size of a bantha haunch. There were 6 swoops parked in a random fashion around the open space.
You may remember me, Didi said. Didi Ado? I was in yesterday?
The massive creature said nothing, just watched Didi with flat eyes.
Then again, you may not, Didi said nervously. This is my very good friend, the Great Jedi Knight, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan, this is the swoop seller, Uso Iso.
The creature did not shift his gaze from Didi's face.
Obviously, you are a creature of action, and I should get right to the point, Didi said. The swoop I bought yesterday, I have changed my mind.
A flicker of alertness lit Uso Iso's opaque gaze.
I would like my money back, Didi said, trying to sound forceful.
Finally, Uso Iso spoke.
No.
Didi took a delicate step backward.
One moment.
He leaned back and whispered to Obi-Wan.
Can't you draw your lightsaber or Jedi move something? You don't have to kill him.
No, Obi-Wan said.
A deal is a deal,
Uso Iso said, crossing his huge arms.
You are insulting me with your presence. I do not like to be insulted.
No insult intended, none at all, Didi said rapidly. Just a polite request. Surely there beats a heart underneath that, magnificent physique.
Two hearts, actually,
Uso Iso said. He withdrew an electro jabber from his belt.
Would you like to continue the argument?
Didi froze, staring at the weapon.
No argument, just a thought. Such a pleasant afternoon. Oh, we must be going.
Didi almost ran from the shop. Obi-Wan followed. The door slid shut behind them, and Obi-Wan turned to Didi disgustedly.
That was no swoop seller, he accused him. An unusual type, yes, Didi said. Most helpful. Well, it's been such an unexpected, pleasurable experience to see you, my friend, but I must be going.
Obi-Wan stepped into his path. Explain.
Most happy to oblige, Obi-Wan, Didi said. It is possible that the swoop seller might have an additional business.
Ah, Obi-Wan said.
Perhaps he sells swoops. I'm sure he does, in fact, a few here and there, but that was not my business with him,
Didi said evasively. Your business with him was? Obi-Wan asked.
A small bet, Didi said.
He held up his hands as Obi-Wan glowered at him.
Such a tiny bet on one of the events. Even the Jedi must realize that such an opportunity exists here on Yuthron, and there will be many who wish to place a wager.
Certainly we realize that, Obi-Wan said. It is also illegal. The Senate has banned gambling on the Galactic Games, and for good reason. It attracts criminals. He underlined the last word, giving Didi a sharp glance. Didi nodded, frowning.
True, it would attract the wrong sort, unlike me, who only places a bet now and again for the fun of it.
Obi-Wan sighed. So why did you try to get your money back?
I was too impulsive, Didi confessed. One of my faults, along with my generosity, that gets me into trouble. I made a wager and then my guilt overwhelmed me.
Since when have you felt guilty about breaking the law?
I prefer to think I bend it, Obi-Wan. But that's not what caused my great guilt. It is because the credits I used were not mine.
Whose were they? Obi-Wan sensed he was nearing the real story at last.
Bog and Astri's.
Didi hung his head.
It was wrong. You cannot reproach me more than I have reproached myself. But they have a little wealth hidden away for some land Bog wishes to purchase, and this purchase will not be made for some time. The credits were just lying there, such a waste. I assumed I could take the credits, make the bet, collect my winnings, and return the credits I borrowed without Astri knowing.
And what if you lost?
I had such a sure tip. I did not think it possible.
Obi-Wan tapped a finger on his belt. If it is such a sure thing, why do you want your money back?
My guilt happened, Didi said, his brown eyes wide. I can't do that to Astri.
And you also discovered that Bog and Astri would need the credits sooner than you thought, Obi-Wan guessed.
Well, they happened to meet the owner of the land they want to buy here at the games, and he's willing to sell at last.
So they will find the credits missing. Obi-Wan sighed. There is only one thing to do. Confess what you've done to Astri.
That is a good idea, my friend. That is exactly what I will do.
Obi-Wan knew perfectly well that Didi would do nothing of the kind. And do not involve me any further in your schemes, he said sternly. You are on your own from now on. You cannot use the Jedi Order to threaten others.
Not I!
Didi exclaimed in a hurt tone.
How can you say this when I am the biggest supporter of Jedi in the galaxy? I did give you inside information, after all, he pointed out. You now know the most important bookie at the games.
Shaking his head, Obi-Wan left Didi, no doubt to concoct further schemes to get himself out of trouble. The gleam in Didi's eyes told him that. Which reminded him of his Padawan. The gleam in Anakin's eyes had clearly told Obi-Wan that his Padawan would not be able to resist the lure of pod racing for long. No doubt he was there now. After checking in with Ciri and Rygall, Obi-Wan squeezed aboard a crowded transit red. By the time it reached the northern edge of the city, he was the only one aboard. He jumped out and it turned around to speed back to the city. Obi-Wan stood in the center of a dusty road. Hills shimmered in the distance. He saw no sign of living beings. He summoned the Force. As clearly as a directional laser, the Force told him where the cave entrance would be. He struck off toward the hillside and climbed until he found a screen of thick green foliage. He pushed the bushes aside and found the cave entrance. Obi-Wan hiked inside. He found the pit hangar easily. His Padawan stood over an engine, a Hydra spanner in his hand. Obi-Wan came up behind him. Anakin was so absorbed that his usual sensitivity to his master's presence was absent. It's gotta be calibrated exactly right, Anakin was saying to two young Alina mechanics standing nearby. We might have to do it 50 times to get it right, or we might get lucky and get it right in two. I hope it's the latter, Obi-Wan said, because there is a mission you should be attending to. Anakin stood up so abruptly that he banged his head on the turbine.
Master, I didn't see you.
Obi-Wan examined the pod racer. I see that you're busy.
I thought I'd lend a hand to Dobie and Deland.
Anakin looked uncomfortable.
If they win, they free their sister. She's a slave.
I see. Obi-Wan nodded at the two brothers. I wish you good luck. Anakin, may I speak with you a moment? He drew Anakin aside. You know this is wrong, he told his Padawan with a frown. I'm sure you are helping for the right reasons, but this is not our mission. We have more important things to do. And may I remind you that pod racing is illegal?
But the ruling power is looking the other way.
But the Games Council is concerned, as should you be. Once word gets out, spectators will arrive. This could turn into a dangerous situation. Do you know what the course will be?
Through the caves, Anakin said excitedly. Can you imagine the difficulties? And they've already thought about the spectators. They're going to set up a viewing stand near the finish line.
That doesn't mean they will be safe. Obi-Wan's comlink signaled, and he answered it brusquely. The unfamiliar voice was frantic with urgency.
There is an emergency.
Who is this? Obi-Wan asked.
Bog. It's Bog. You must come immediately. The official quarters.
What is wrong?
Come now!
Bog shouted, and the line went dead. We need transport, Obi-Wan said to Anakin. Dobie approached them.
We have an airspeeder, he said. You're welcome to borrow it for as long as you need it.
Thank you, Obi-Wan said. Although he was irritated with Anakin for heading straight to the pod races, he was always glad to see how Anakin's generosity endeared him to others. Strangers became friends quickly for his Padawan. Anakin connected to the living Force as Qui-Gon had. He had that gift. What he needed to develop was Qui-Gon's wisdom. That would only take time and missions. And mistakes. He could hear Qui-Gon's dry tone in his head. The speeder was tweaked to run smoothly at high speeds, which Obi-Wan would expect from two pod racer owners. He sped back to the city core, Anakin at his side. They passed through the high security gate on the outskirts of the games quarters, where athletes and officials were housed. Obi-Wan was relieved when he arrived to see Astri and Didi standing nearby as Bog talked earnestly to Ciri and Ferris. True stood next to Rygall. Ciri turned to greet him with a thinly disguised look of disgust on her face. Obi-Wan leaped out of the speeder. What happened? Bog's speeder was stolen, Ciri said. He felt an alert to all Jedi teams was justified. Rygall sighed. Obi-Wan gave Bog an exasperated glance.
You don't understand, Bog said. The speeder was in a secure area. This is serious. I would think the Jedi would be concerned.
There will always be petty crime at a large event like this one, Ciri said.
Petty? Bog flushed. I don't call this petty.
What Ciri means is that this is really a case for the planet's security, Obi-Wan said. Bog flourished his comlink.
Really? Let's see what Liviani says when she arrives.
You called Liviani? Obi-Wan asked.
Of course. As the head of the Council of the Games, I thought she would want to know, Bog said.
A gleaming black airspeeder drew up, and Liviani slid out.
I received your message, she told Bog in a concerned tone.
Tell me again what happened, and what exactly is missing.
Bog threw the Jedi a triumphant look.
The speeder was gone when Astra and I returned from the opening rituals, he said. As I told you, some personal possessions were inside. My green cloak, the only one I brought for warmth, and a box of my favorite fig de candy, as well as my datapad, my travel kit, and I'm sure other important things.
This is very bad, Liviani said. I'm glad you contacted me. She turned to the Jedi. You must investigate this at once.
Ciri looked startled. Investigate a speeder theft? It's a waste of our time.
Ciri was never one to hide her feelings.
Surely there are better uses for our time, Obi-Wan said in a more conciliatory tone.
I don't think so, Liviani said flatly. Begin at once.
We don't take orders from you, Ciri said. We're here at the ruling power's request.
Then I shall contact the ruling power, Liviani snapped, reaching for her comlink. All I have to do is contact Maxo Vista. He will go to them at once, and they will order you.
No one orders the Jedi. Rygall spoke at last. We accept requests. Then we decide.
Of course, Liviani said through tight lips.
She shoved her comlink back into her cloak pocket.
Then I request that this be investigated.
Obi-Wan nodded shortly.
In that case, we accept your request.
One Jedi team will investigate. Liviani swept off in a swirl of robes and scarves. Ciri drew closer to Obi-Wan.
I still say this is a waste of time. Who knows how long it will take to investigate a theft?
I do, Obi-Wan said. It will take exactly 10 seconds. Then he looked hard at Didi, who coughed and looked away. Anakin saw his master signal to Didi. Didi tried to ignore the signal, but Obi-Wan strode over. Anakin followed curiously. Obi-Wan drew Didi aside.
You'd better start talking fast, he said.
I didn't steal it. I borrowed it, Didi said. I was going to return it.
The same way you were going to return the credits?
Ah, you see? Didi cried triumphantly. My point exactly. How could I return the credits if I didn't steal the speeder?
Explain your logic, Obi-Wan said. Nobody else can follow it.
I was going to take your excellent advice and confess everything to Astri, Didi said. I was on my way to find her, and I saw the speeder. I began to reflect on the amount of credits I had borrowed, and the fact that if Bog found out, he would no doubt banish me to wander the galaxy friendless and alone. So I thought it best to return the credits without his ever finding out.
So you stole his speeder?
Borrowed. But only so I could repay the credits, you see?
Well, Obi-Wan said, you're just going to have to return it.
Ah, Didi said, another excellent suggestion, except it's too late. I've sold the speeder.
At least then you can give them the credits, Obi-Wan said with a sigh.
But I can't. I have to place another bet.
Obi-Wan turned away.
Fine. I'm no longer involved. I'm telling Bog who stole the speeder, and you can explain it any way you want.
Wait!
Didi screeched hurriedly.
My good friend Obi-Wan, you don't understand. I will return the speeder most definitely. My bet is a sure thing.
No bet is a sure thing, Didi, Obi-Wan said. When are you going to learn that?
But this one is, I promise.
How do you know the bet is a sure thing? Obi-Wan asked.
Didi looked uncomfortable under Obi-Wan's scrutiny.
Well, you might say I have a tip.
What kind of tip? Obi-Wan frowned.
A tip that an event is fixed, Didi admitted. From a source I trust.
Who? Obi-Wan demanded.
Someone you know, Didi said. Flee.
Obi-Wan groaned.
Not flee. Is he on Ysaron?
Of course, Didi said. Isn't everyone? And you can't beat Flea's information. The swoop obstacle race is fixed, and I know the winner.
Wait here, Obi-Wan told him sternly. He drew Anakin aside. I think we should pursue this, he said. If some of the events are fixed, it could cause major trouble. It could be a serious disruption of the peace. Anakin hid his disappointment with a frown.
Who is Flea? Do you trust him?
Trust him? Obi-Wan grimaced. Not at all. But if he's heard something, we could have problems, even if his information is false. If he's heard an event is fixed, he isn't the only one who thinks this. Obi-Wan gave Anakin a careful look. What's wrong, Padawan?
It seems a waste of time to me, Anakin said, reluctant to contradict his master.
Obi-Wan nodded as if considering Anakin's opinion. What do you think would be a better use of our time? Anakin looked down and said nothing. Tell me, Obi-Wan continued, what do you think would happen if it was discovered that some of the events are fixed? Anakin shrugged.
Some will be upset, especially those who have placed illegal bets.
What about the planets involved? If it appears that some have cheated or conspired to defraud the games, how will other worlds react?
I guess it could create some unrest.
Yes, young Padawan, Obi-Wan said. Hundreds of thousands of beings are crammed into one city. All have come to cheer their heroes or their future heroes. It may not seem an important lead for us to follow, but missions don't always start out with a battle. Sometimes they begin with something insignificant, something unimportant. Part of being a Jedi is to recognize the small thing that can change everything. Obi-Wan didn't blame Anakin for his puzzlement. Didi's bet didn't appear to be worth Jedi investigation, but instinct was ticking inside Obi-Wan, telling him that this was something to pursue. Didi nervously scuttled through the crowded streets, his eyes alert for the security force he was sure would be pursuing him soon.
It occurs to me that Flea might not be too pleased to hear that I have involved the Jedi, he said. Perhaps it would be better if you went on alone.
No, it wouldn't, Obi-Wan answered firmly.
Didi turned into a crowded open-air plaza. Obi-Wan's glance swept the plaza. Although he had not seen Flea in many years, he recognized him immediately. He sat with his back to a wall, snaked with blooming vines, tapping one long foot to the music. He was as thin and spidery as ever, and his long ears appeared even longer, the lobes resting on his shoulders. His pleasant expression darkened with apprehension when he saw the Jedi, but he quickly turned it into a welcoming smile.
Didi, old friend, such a surprise to see you on Ysaron. Though everyone who is anyone is here, so there you go. Not such a surprise after all.
Do you remember Obi-Wan Kenobi, the great Jedi Knight?
Aye, but he was just a learner when I knew him, Flea said. Obi-Wan, what a fortunate meeting. It is my luck to be able to renew our great friendship.
We were never friends, Obi-Wan pointed out.
We weren't. It's true. And that is a pity.
Flea agreed sadly. Didi tells us you have some information about some of the events at the games, Obi-Wan said. Flea narrowed his eye at Didi.
Do I? I hear things, but nothing important enough to involve the Jedi.
That is not what Didi said. Obi-Wan stood casually, as though he had all the time in the world, but he was prepared to pressure Flea.
All right, Didi said when Flea shot him another look. I told him, but he's a Jedi, Flea. You can't lie to a Jedi.
I don't see why not,
Flea shot back, too angry to watch his words.
They're no different from anybody else.
Oh, yes, Anakin said stridently. We are. Flea's gaze flicked to the lightsabers tucked into Obi-Wan's and Anakin's belts.
Uh-huh. You do have a point. There you go. I could see it. I heard a rumor that one of the events was fixed. I told Didi about it.
After all, why shouldn't my friend benefit?
Are you involved in this? Obi-Wan asked him. Do you know who fixed the obstacle race and how?
I know nothing except this. The participant from Alderaan will win.
Obi-Wan frowned. How could a swoop obstacle race, a series of timed individual races against the clock, be fixed? How do you know?
I don't have to tell you that,
Flea said defiantly. That's true, Obi-Wan said. But you will have to tell the security force for the ruling power. Flea broke into a smile.
No need for that. I'd much rather share with friends. I was told by Quentor, a being very much like me, who does similar work.
Another thief.
Another businessman like myself, who buys and sells information and the occasional valuable item that might find its way into our hands. Quentor swore that there is an insider at the games who has arranged to fix an event. I thought it was a rumor worth a few gambling credits for myself and my friend.
Obi-Wan considered this. Flea was calling it a rumor, but he had told Didi to bet, and no doubt had placed a bet himself. Flea saw Obi-Wan's hesitation.
You might want to place a bet yourself, my friend. Even the Jedi can use wealth. You can stop hitching rides and have your own transports. Maybe invest in some new robes.
Obi-Wan turned and searched the event board. The event is starting soon.
Yes, unfortunately, too late for you to do anything about it, Flea said. So sorry. There you go.
Stadium 5. It's not far, Obi-Wan said. Come on, Anakin. You too, Didi.
Not me, surely, Didi said. I need to visit with my old friend.
Obi-Wan had grabbed his collar and yanked him into step next to the Jedi. They hurried from the plaza. Obi-Wan and Anakin quickened their pace, so Didi had a hard time keeping up.
There's an air taxi, Didi called, breathing hard. I beg you, Obi-Wan, take it.
Obi-Wan signaled and the air taxi zoomed to a stop. It was empty except for the pilot. The swoop obstacle course event, Stadium 5, Obi-Wan said. The pilot nodded without turning and glided back into the air lane. What will we do when we get there? Anakin asked in a low tone. I'm not sure yet, Obi-Wan said. We can't say for sure the event is fixed. We can't make that accusation without more proof. The ship's velocity pushed him back against the seat. Buildings were a blur of bright color as they flashed by.
Master, I feel a disturbance in the Force, Anakin murmured.
Obi-Wan had been startled by the same feeling. He rose and started toward the pilot. But the cruiser jerked violently to the left, almost throwing him to the floor. Then the pilot reversed the engines and zoomed down another space lane, the wrong way. Cruisers were heading straight for them. The pilot pushed the speed to maximum and jumped to his feet. He balanced for a moment on the lip of the air taxi, then calmly leaped into the air. He was wearing an anti-grav propulsion belt, so he dropped quickly but safely to the ground, leaving them in a runaway taxi screaming the wrong way down an air lane. Anakin vaulted over the rows of seats and landed in the pilot's chair, his hands already outstretched for the controls. In midair, he had seen precisely what he needed to do. A less experienced pilot would have immediately reduced speed. Anakin knew better. He needed the speed to avoid the collision. Instead of slowing, he made a hard right. The cruiser passed them by, so close Anakin could see the fearful gaze of the pilot, who did not have the time or reflexes to alter his course. As soon as they were past the cruiser, Anakin reduced speed while turning to the left. Then he kept the air taxi turning until they were facing in the correct direction. Anakin calmly joined the stream of traffic.
Good piloting, Padawan. Obi-Wan sank into a seat behind Anakin. That was close.
Didi rose shakily to his feet.
What kind kind of pilot tries to crash an air taxi and then jumps off? I've had some bad air taxi drivers, but...
He looked at the Jedi.
No. No, no!
Yes, Obi-Wan said. It was deliberate. We were definitely targeted, most likely by Flea. Didi shook his head.
Not Flea. He's my friend.
Well, your friend told someone we were on our way to the stadium, Anakin said. That empty air taxi didn't show up by accident. Anakin slowed the craft, and they all jumped out. Stadium 5 was now only steps away. They hurried through the tall arches and into the open-air arena. Their ears rang with the noise of a roaring crowd. The race had already begun. Obi-Wan saw that the large circular track was made up of many levels, from the floor of the arena to the top. Each level had a series of holographic obstacles for the swoops to avoid or evade, such as trees, creatures, and traffic officers. Obi-Wan strode to a viewing platform. The noise of the crowd reverberated off the walls of the stadium and caused the air to ring against his ears. The agile swoops, wearing different planetary colors, zoomed around holographic obstacles that suddenly appeared in their paths. The crowd roared approval or fury at the spectacle. Obi-Wan watched carefully. The swoops seemed to be functioning perfectly. It has to be the timers, he murmured to Anakin. Someone must have tampered with them. Only a hundredth of a second off, and the race will be won. Are the timers controlled by one person? Anakin asked. I don't know, Obi-Wan said, but we can find out. The race ended with the Alderaan pilot zooming past the finish line to cheers and boos. Beside Obi-Wan, Didi groaned.
There goes my fortune, he said.
A viewing platform glided into the center of the stadium. A tall, handsome Ysaron male held a flashing hologram embedded in crystal over his head. It was the first place award. The crowd went wild.
It's Maxo Vista,
Didi breathed in tones of awe. Anakin peered across the distance. He's older than I thought.
He's magnificent, Didi said.
Didi, I want you to do something for me, Obi-Wan said, turning his back on the award ceremony. First of all, stay out of trouble. Second, stick close to Flea. I might need to talk to him again.
All right, Obi-Wan. I will do what you say.
Let us go, Padawan, Obi-Wan said. I'd like to have a word with the timekeeper for this event. On the way to the exclusive VIP skybox on level 20, where the game's council members and other officials sat, Obi-Wan contacted the keeper of the archives, Jocasta Nu, at the temple. Can you do a quick search for me on a being named Quento, your basic operator who hangs around the Senate? As he spoke, Obi-Wan stepped inside the council skybox. In the first row of the box, Maxo Vista was talking to a tall Ysaron dressed in a long white robe.
Can we meet him? Can we meet Maxo Vista? Anakin whispered, close by his side.
Maxo Vista?
Jocasta Nu asked, overhearing Anakin. Her voice lost its business-like quality. Obi-Wan had never heard her sound so warm.
Have you met him?
No, Obi-Wan said.
You don't know who he is, do you?
Jocasta Nu demanded. Can you retrieve that information for me? Obi-Wan asked irritably.
Yes, Obi-Wan. I'll do what I can.
Jocasta Nu's voice brimmed with humor, an unusual occurrence. Maxo Vista caught sight of them and came forward with the tall Ysaron.
I have hoped to meet the Jedi, he said. This is Ruler 3, one of the esteemed ruling power.
Obi-Wan introduced himself and Anakin. Maxo Vista flashed a charismatic smile, his vivid green eyes shining.
We are grateful that the Jedi have graciously agreed to attend the games. With so many worlds coming together for these games, it holds out a promise for peace throughout the galaxy.
Ruler 3 bowed.
Our government thanks you. Now I must attend the next event.
As soon as Ruler 3 had left, Obi-Wan turned back to Maxo Vista. We would like to speak with the official timekeeper for this event.
Of course.
Maxo leaned forward to touch a glowing screen.
That would be Arno Daring,
He's already left, I'm afraid. But I can give you his room number at the official games quarters. We'd appreciate it.
Maxo nodded and consulted the screen again, then gave them Arno Daring's location.
Obi-Wan and Anakin hurried out of Stadium 5. At the quarters, they passed the security checkpoint and quickly accessed a map for directions to Block 7, Room 4116. They hurried down the outdoor walkways that connected the various temporary buildings, built of hard duroplastoid materials in bright colors. When they reached Block 7, they took a moving walkway up to the fourth story. A tall humanoid male came out of a door at the end of the walkway. He paused while he carefully placed various personal items in different sized pockets. His neutral gaze slid over the surrounding area and lit on the Jedi. He jumped, and a look of surprised panic lit his eyes. He turned abruptly and headed the other way. Arno Daring, Obi-Wan called, quickening his pace. We'd like to talk to you.
Daring began to run. Obi-Wan and Anakin leaped forward in a surge of speed. Daring had a good head start, but he was no athlete. When Daring raced out an exit from the quarters and into the street, Obi-Wan was merely steps away. Suddenly, a fast-moving airspeeder headed straight for Daring. Obi-Wan reached out, ready to grab the waving hem of the man's tunic. But the speeder struck the slight man first, sending him flying through the air. Arno Daring landed with a sickening thud.
Go to him, Obi-Wan ordered Anakin tersely.
Obi-Wan jumped after the speeder. Landing on the speeder's outrigger component, Obi-Wan drew his lightsaber and severed it with one stroke. The speeder veered and crashed into a bright yellow bench, and the pilot leaped out. Obi-Wan recognized him instantly as the pilot of the air taxi. The pilot leaped over the speeder and raced down the street. Without breaking stride, he shot a cable launcher up to the roof of a high building. The cable launcher pulled him up, and he disappeared onto the roof. Obi-Wan activated his own launcher and followed, the wind rushing past his ears. He jumped onto the roof just as the pilot leaped to the next building. Obi-Wan followed. The pilot never looked back. Obi-Wan noted his coolness. There were not many being pursued who did not pause to check on the location of their pursuer. The pilot raced to the edge of the roof that overlooked the street. The pilot paused and activated his anti-grav propulsion belt. It allowed him to drop off the roof and land safely on the walkway below. Obi-Wan leaped down and had to swerve at the last moment to avoid a child who suddenly darted out from between her mother and father. He landed hard. He was just in time to see the pilot get swallowed up by the surging crowd. Irritation flamed and died away. He would have liked to have caught the pilot. It did not happen. On to the next. He made his way back to the quarters. Anakin knelt by Arno Daring, his hand on the man's shoulder. Obi-Wan knew immediately that he was dead. When Arno Daring left his room, did you notice anything significant? Obi-Wan asked. He watched as his Padawan frowned, thinking. He was just sliding his data pad into his tunic with his left hand. He dropped it when he saw us. It fell in the doorway and the door did not shut. Exactly, Obi-Wan said. I think we might want to take a peek into the life of Arno Daring. They passed through the security gate again and quickly made their way to Daring's room. The data pad lay in the doorway. Obi-Wan handed it to Anakin and reached down for a small folder that had been dropped as well. In it was a text doc ID for someone named Ak Durank.
It's a false text doc for Arno Daring, he told Anakin. Often new identities use the same initials as the being's real name. It helps them to remember their new identity.
But what does it mean? Anakin asked. Why would Daring want a new identity?
There's only one reason, Obi-Wan said. He was afraid he would get caught. The question is why? Obi-Wan surveyed the room. It was small and neat. Everything was put away. A closed travel pack sat on a table. Two chronos sat by the sleep couch. Obi-Wan picked them up. They are set to wake him up, he said. He used two so that he would not oversleep. He placed them back where he'd found them. Interesting. A chrono expert who does not trust chronos. Master, look at this. Anakin bent over a holofile. He's noted the events that he set up the timing system for. The bowcaster skill contest and the holographic obstacle course are the only ones left. But Master, Anakin looked up. The pod race is here too. Obi-Wan came over and studied the file. So, whoever is behind fixing the games could be fixing the pod race too. What I don't understand is how a pod race can be fixed, Anakin said. It's not like an obstacle swoop race where individual segments are timed. Whoever crosses the finish line first wins. Obi-Wan nodded. I see what you mean. But it can't be a coincidence that the corrupt timing judge has agreed to time the race. He stared at the neat belongings of Arno Dering while he considered their next step. He knew it was inevitable, but he didn't like it. He would have to send Anakin back to the pod racers. This could be a larger scale operation than I thought, he said aloud. Anakin, you must go back to the pod racers. Obi-Wan did not like the way Anakin's face brightened at this. You have made friends with Dobie and Deland. See if they know how the race could be fixed and if there's heavy betting going on. And what will you do, Master? I'm going to work from the opposite end. If we want to find out who is fixing the events, we have to find out who benefits. That means that someone, or a group of beings, are placing bets on the outcome. But how can you discover who that is? I have to reacquaint myself with Uso Iso. Anakin piloted Dobie and Deland's speeder back to the podrace hangar, leaving Obi-Wan as he checked in with Ciri and Rygol to see if other complications had sprung up. He saw Dobie and Deland working on the engine as he parked the speeder and hurried over. Deland raised a grease-stained face.
Am I glad to see you? We have a rotor problem we can't seem to fix.
Let me have a look. Anakin leaned over the engine. This could be a connector problem. Hand me that hydro spanner, will you? Anakin took the hydro spanner from Dobie and bent over the engine. Have you run the track in a speeder yet? He asked. An advanced look is always a good idea.
Can't, Dobie said. The pod racers won't know the track until they're racing.
Anakin looked up. What do you mean?
The onboard nav computer will flash us the next area of the track every 3 minutes, Deland explained. We have to race and navigate at the same time. It's a new innovation that Sebulba dreamed up. He knows Hakula can do it, with his reflexes, Dobie said.
Anakin tinkered with the valves. Could this be the key to how the race was fixed? What if Sebulba's pod racer got the track information before anyone else? That would definitely give Hakula an edge. Who sends the route to the onboard computers? He asked.
The official timekeeper set up the program, Dobie said. Don't know his name.
But I do. It's Arno Dering. And Arno Dering is dead. Someone else will have to run the program. But who? Who's the favorite? Anakin asked. How are the odds running?
10-1 for Hakula, Deland said. Rumor has it that Sebulba has bet a fortune on his son.
Of course he has. He knows Hakula will win. Anakin glanced over the hood of the pod racer to where Sebulba was sitting, sipping tea while the pit droids worked on Hakula's pod racer. Sebulba looked over and met his eyes. Something happened behind the creature's bulging eyes. Memory clicked in. He rose, his front arms waving, and approached.
Now I recognize you, slave boy. All you needed was a little grease on your face.
He laughed.
What an unfortunate surprise. I thought you were dead.
Not yet, Sebulba, Anakin shot back. I'm here to make sure your son loses, the way you did back on Tatooine. Badly.
Insolent boy!
Sebulba hissed, raising his hand for a blow. Sebulba's arm moved so fast it was a blur, but to Anakin, it looked like slow motion. He easily stepped aside in time. The wind fanned against his face. Sebulba staggered, his balance upset. He had expected to land the punch. You can't touch me, Anakin said. He whispered the words close enough now to smell Sebulba's rank scent. You were never fast enough. You still aren't.
Slave boy!
Sebulba went toward him again. This time, Anakin whirled and delivered a kick that sent Zabulba flying. Enraged, Zabulba started toward awaiting Anakin, but suddenly, the glimpid Aldar Beedo stepped between them.
"You're disturbing my concentration," he said to Anakin, tapping a blaster on his belt.
Anakin hesitated, not sure what to do. The situation now threatened to spiral out of control. Hekula was starting across to join in. If a fight began, others could be hurt, including Dobie and Deland.
"Master!"
Suddenly, Jella appeared and tugged at Sebulba's robe.
"I have made fresh tea."
"So what?"
Zabulba said furiously.
"Get away from me, slave!"
He struggled to kick Jella aside with his hind legs while keeping his eyes on Anakin. Deland jumped forward to protect his sister. Sebulba's kick connected, and Deland flew through the air, smashing against the cliff face. He landed awkwardly on his arm with a cry.
"Deland!"
Jella ran toward her brother. She knelt beside him.
"You're hurt."
"Get away from him!"
Hekula suddenly roared, rushing forward. Jella hesitated. Aldar Beedo shrugged and turned away, tucking his blaster back into his belt.
"This is a family matter. I have work to do."
Deland's teeth gritted.
"Go back,"
he told his sister.
"I'm all right."
Anakin trembled with the effort of holding himself back. Jella hurried away. Dobie helped his brother to his feet. Deland held his arm carefully.
"Better get the medic, boy,"
Zabulba called before scuttling back to his pod racer.
"It looks like you won't be able to pilot your pod racer."
"He's right,"
Deland said through gritted teeth.
"It's broken."
"What are we going to do?"
Dobie whispered.
"This was our last chance. What can we do for Jella now?"
Anakin saw the desperation on the two brothers' faces. "I can pilot the pod racer," he said. "If I win, your sister will go free."
"But that isn't fair,"
Dobie said.
"Why would you do such a thing?"
"Because it's the right thing to do," Anakin said. Obi-Wan stood across the street from Uso Iso's swoop shop. He had disguised himself as a space traveler, pulling on a dull gray cloak and a wrapped headdress. Obi-Wan saw a short, plump figure suddenly dart across the street and head for Iso's dark front door. He sprinted across the street to catch up. He yanked Didi back by the collar of his tunic. "What are you doing?"
"Nothing. At least nothing now, since you're holding my collar," Didi said.
"You said you were going to buy back Bog Speeda," Obi-Wan accused.
"I tried. I did. But the cheating monkey lizard I sold it to upped the price,"
Didi told him.
"I need to raise a little cash, so I thought I would sell Bog's datapad and buy back his speeder instead."
Obi-Wan saw the datapad tucked under Didi's arm. "Let me see that." There was a chance that someone on the Games Council knew the events were rigged. This might be an easy way to find out. He quickly accessed the information on Bog's system and flipped through random files. There didn't seem to be anything amiss. It appeared that Bog's only job on the Games Council was arranging VIP seating. He had made listings matching senators with exclusive gallery skyboxes for various events. So much for his importance. Obi-Wan shut down the datapad. He tucked it inside his tunic. Obi-Wan's comlink signaled. Jocasta News' voice came through crisply.
"I found out who Quentor is. Were you playing a joke on me, Obi-Wan?"
"No, of course not."
"There was no record of him anywhere, so I did the usual criminal search. Then a deep background trace. Nothing appeared."
"So he is an underground figure?" Jocasta New chuckled.
"Not exactly. He's a yellow-tailed summer bird."
"He's a bird?"
"An unofficial pet of the Senate. He lives in the eaves of the building, and the senators leave him fruit and crumbs to feed on."
Obi-Wan groaned, then thanked Jocasta New and cut the communication. He turned to Didi. "Do you know where Flea is staying?" Didi shook his head.
"A guest house, I suppose. A hovel, I'm sure. Flea is very cheap."
"Find out."
Ah, yes, Obi-Wan.
Didi bowed and rushed away. Obi-Wan knocked on the door to Iso's shop, duplicating Didi's rhythmic knock. Someone hurried out, his face turned away. Obi-Wan pretended to examine a beat-up swoop with a dented handlebar while he listened to the other occupant of the shop approach Uso Iso.
I'd like to buy a swoop.
At what price?
The bettor named a figure, then said,
I'll take it to the Blaster Skill event, where I hope to see Wisao Torin of Resi 9 win.
That is a good plan.
Uso Iso slipped the credits into a wide belt he wore around his waist and entered some information into a data pad. He handed the bettor a small durasheet.
Here is your receipt.
Obi-Wan followed the lead of the bettor, naming a figure, then saying, I plan to take the swoop to the pod race and hope that Deland Tyrell will be the winner. Uso Iso shook his head.
There's been a last-minute change. A new driver. Do you still want the swoop?
Who is the driver? Obi-Wan asked curiously. Iso consulted his datapad.
Anakin Skywalker.
Obi-Wan felt the shock shimmer inside him, but he did not register surprise on his face.
Well?
Iso demanded impatiently. Before Obi-Wan could answer, a small, slight being with four eyes, two of them set on the sides of his head, slipped inside the shop.
Security patrol outside.
Uso Iso pushed a lever and a wall slid back, revealing more swoops in various stages of repair.
Beesum.
He tossed a toolkit to his assistant.
Start working.
I don't know how to fix the swoop.
I don't care. Just do it.
He turned to Obi-Wan.
Security makes patrols every once in a while. Nothing to worry about.
Now that Iso was in danger of losing Obi-Wan's business, he was suddenly friendly. He had also left his datapad angled toward Obi-Wan, and the notations were easy to read. In the time it took for Iso to check out Beesum's activities, Obi-Wan had scanned the file and memorized it. To his surprise, the letters and numbers looked familiar. It took him only a moment to realize that they were similar to the notes recording the skybox seating on Bog's datapad. Which meant that Bog wasn't recording seats for senators. He was recording bets. Obi-Wan left the shop and found a quiet alley to peruse Bog's files. He read the names of the senators who had the same notations as Iso's datapad. Some of the names he didn't recognize, but many he did. He had no illusions about corruption in the Senate. But he was shocked to find that so many senators would be involved in an illegal scheme such as this one. He had the deal with Anakin, but he had to pursue this first. Obi-Wan found Bog in a VIP box watching a match of Crovation. When Astri saw him, her smile was wide and welcoming.
Obi-Wan, how good of you to come by. The match is almost finished.
Obi-Wan walked into the box.
How can I help you, Obi-Wan?
Obi-Wan withdrew the datapad. I have something of yours. Bog hurried forward.
You found it? Where? Thank you.
Obi-Wan slipped the datapad back into his pocket. I'm afraid I can't return it just yet. I must confess that I took a look at your files, Bog. Bog looked disconcerted.
Well, I see. I suppose that's all right. I have no secrets.
Obi-Wan was puzzled. Bog did not seem guilty or worried. I accessed the file referring to the work you've done for the senators.
Yes, I arranged special seating for them, Bog said, nodding. I didn't know Jedi cared about such things.
We don't, Obi-Wan said quietly. But you did not arrange skyboxes for the senators. You placed bets for them on events in which the outcome is assured.
Obi-Wan, I don't know what you're talking about,
Bog interrupted, shaking his head.
The games are fixed? Senators betting? You must be mistaken.
Obi-Wan studied Bog as the crowd around them roared at a player's score. If you are not involved, you are being used. Where did you get the instructions on how to proceed? How did you know which senators to find seating for?
Liviani gave me the list of senators, Bog said. That is standard. The head of the Games Council always gets a list of important beings throughout the galaxy to accord special favors to. I used the council funds to pay the ruling power for the skyboxes.
So who did you contact to arrange the skyboxes?
As it turned out, I didn't have to contact anyone. He came to me. An odd four-eyed creature. His name was Busa? No, that's not it. Bisa.
Besum? Obi-Wan suggested.
That's it!
Bog nodded as the crowd jeered a questionable play.
I transferred the credits and ordered the seating from Busa, Besum, and he handed me the receipts.
Do you have them?
No, I placed them in the welcome packs for the senators.
Obi-Wan frowned. Why would the senators want receipts to be placed in their welcome packets? Anyone could see them. Could it be that the senators themselves don't know about this? Could it be that the ruling power has arranged this in order to disgrace them? But why?
Bog grew restless at Obi-Wan's silence.
I didn't place any bets. I'm sure this is a misunderstanding.
I'm sure it isn't, Astri said to her husband. Obi-Wan knows what he's talking about. She turned to Obi-Wan. Is Bog in trouble?
Bog swallowed. If I am, I will face it.
We will face it, Astri said, putting her hand on Bog's arm. Together. Obi-Wan saw the look that Bog gave Astri, a look of tenderness and devotion. He saw that Bog did love Astri, and his instincts told him that Bog had been used as a pawn in the scheme. Bog will not be in trouble if he didn't do anything wrong, Obi-Wan told the couple. I will make sure of that. Now, please excuse me. Obi-Wan stepped outside, leaving the sounds of the match behind him. He quickly contacted Jocasta Nu at the temple. I am sending you a list of senators. I need to know if there is any link among them.
There are many ways senators can be linked, Obi-Wan. Through sponsoring legislation, committees, subcommittees, special hearings, oversight subcommittees on special hearings.
I get the picture, Obi-Wan said. Just do the best you can, as quickly as you can. Can you also look into the ruling power and see if there's some connection with those senators?
Of course. I'll contact you as soon as I have information.
Obi-Wan thanked Jocasta Nu and cut the communication.
If the betting were exposed, the senators involved would be drawn into a scandal. It would not matter if they were guilty or innocent. Their reputations would suffer. Was that the goal? An insider, Flea had said.
He called up Bog's file on his datapad again. He flipped through the holographic files, remembering the notations on Uso Iso's screen. The bets had been placed on the Bowcaster Skill Contest, the Obstacle Course Race, and the Pod Race, the same events that Arno Daring had on his datapad. Obi-Wan contacted Didi on his comlink. Have you found out where Flea is staying?
The Sleek Cruiser Inn on Grand User Street, room 2222. But let me assure you, my friend, this inn is no sleek cruiser. More like a garbage barge.
Just make sure Flea doesn't go off-planet, Obi-Wan told Didi. Contact me if he does.
Obi-Wan tapped his finger on his comlink, planning his next move. It was time to call in the other Jedi teams. He activated his comlink and contacted Ciri. He filled her in on what he had discovered. It seems as though the ruling power could be behind this, he said. They might want to blackmail senators in order to gain power in the Senate, getting appointed to powerful posts. But we have no real proof, and we don't have much time. All three events are scheduled to take place this afternoon.
What do you need?
Ciri asked, getting to the point as quickly as possible, as she usually did.
I have to pay a visit to Flea, and I'd like some company, Obi-Wan said. I think some additional Jedi presence is needed.
I'll be there, and I'll contact Rygol.
His comlink signaled. Anakin was calling. Obi-Wan answered.
Master, things have developed here. Sebulba has recognized me. Because of that, Deelan stepped in to avoid a fight and was injured. He cannot race. I offered to race in his place. Dobby and Deelan are trying to free their sister.
And is that your mission on Yusuron? To free Julla? Obi-Wan asked sternly.
No, But was it Qui-Gon's mission to free me? Must we follow a mission so exactly that we turn our backs on beings who need help? Every mission has a detour. You've told me that.
I've also told you that it is the mark of a Jedi to recognize whether or not to follow the detour.
Then I ask you to let me make this choice.
Obi-Wan pondered the problem. Have you learned anything else?
The pod race is scheduled to take place this afternoon at 3. A viewing area has been set up for spectators in the underground caves. Sebulba has placed enormous bets on his son to win. I think the best way I can find out how the race is fixed and who's behind it is to enter it myself.
All right, Obi-Wan said reluctantly. He would ask Ciri and Rygall to send Ferris and True to observe while Anakin piloted the pod racer. He could not be there with his Padawan, but he did not want Anakin to be alone.
I got it,
Anakin crowed. He tweaked the last screw to the energy binder plate.
We're set.
Whew, Dobie said, pushing his goggles to the top of his head. Anakin jumped off the scaffold he'd used to work on the turbines. Suddenly, his smile dimmed. He spied Ferris and True threading their way toward him through a sea of pit droids and mechanics and pilots, the usual frenzy of a pit hangar before a race. He dodged a lubricant hose and went forward to meet them. True's head swiveled, taking in the excitement.
Strange if you think about it, he said to Anakin.
Anakin wiped his hands on a rag. What?
That pod races are so dangerous, but nobody looks scared.
There are beings who equate danger with pleasure, Ferris said, his eyes dark with disapproval. I'm not clear on why you are racing, Anakin. It's the best way to discover how the race is fixed, Anakin said. Ferris shifted his gaze to take in Dobie and Deland and the pod racer, then scanned the rest of the hangar.
I see.
Our masters have told us that it is possible that advanced knowledge of the track will be sent to one pod racer's nav computer seconds before it is given to the rest. Do you know which pod racer that is?
Hekula,
Anakin said. The Dug, the third pod racer down on the left. You know this for sure?
It's a guess, Anakin admitted.
Do you know when and how the information will be transmitted to the nav computers?
At the start of the race, and then at 3-minute intervals, Anakin said. Who is the timekeeper?
True asked.
Do you think he's the one who will transmit the information?
Anakin nodded. A race referee. The computer system is already in place. Daring has already designed the program. This person will just follow instructions. Ferris frowned. Isn't there any way to tell whoever's in charge of the race what's going on? Surely it would be better to simply cancel the race. Did you think of that?
I'm sure Anakin thought of it, True said. But we can't be sure who knows that the program is a cheat. Whoever it is could alter it with a keystroke, and we'd never know who was behind it. Or why?
Maybe there's still some way to find out, Ferris said. True and I will investigate. True hung back as Ferris walked off.
He's just being careful, he told Anakin.
Anakin's teeth gritted. Is that what you call it? True studied him for a moment.
I feel some darkness from you, Anakin. Your enemy is here, but Sebulba cannot hurt you anymore. Remember, Jedi do not have enemies.
I just want to win, Anakin said. The sleek cruiser inn was just as Didi had described it, a dilapidated building made of patchwork plasteel sheeting. Obi-Wan, Ciri, and Rygall picked through the mess and knocked on Flea's door.
I said I would settle the bill on the way out,
Flea yelled behind the door.
Such a hospitable establishment. I can't wait to return.
He flung the door open and saw the Jedi. He swallowed.
Ah, Jedi. Always a good sign.
He stepped aside and let them enter. Belongings were stuffed into an open case. It was clear that Flea was in the midst of a hasty departure. Leaving so soon? Obi-Wan asked. Ciri and Rygall closed the door and stood in front of it. Obi-Wan casually flung one leg over a stool and sat. A funny thing happened after we left you this morning, We took an air taxi.
Always a good idea,
Flea said nervously.
The streets are so crowded.
And the pilot tried to crash it, Obi-Wan went on. Odd that he knew just where we were and where we were headed.
Maybe you were just lucky.
Maybe you'd like to accompany us to the security office of the ruling power and talk about it, Obi-Wan said. Flea gave a squeak of disappointment and threw himself down on the unmade sleep couch.
I knew I'd never make it off this blasted planet. All right. When you came to ask me about the fixed events, you made me nervous. So I might have alerted someone to your presence. They weren't supposed to kill you, just delay you, I swear. Didi is my friend. I would never allow harm to come to him. And if you think I'd tangle with Jedi, you underestimate my cowardice.
Yet you lie to us, Obi-Wan said. And that is never a good idea, Ciri said. Rai Gaul did not have to say a word. His fierce look spoke for him. Now, tell me again about your friend Quentor, Obi-Wan said, leaning forward.
I see you know about my little joke. I thought it better to protect a friend than expose him.
Who? Obi-Wan asked softly. And tell me the truth this time.
Arno Daring, Flea said. Weeks ago, I was contacted anonymously through messages on my datapad. I was asked to find someone who could rig a false timing device for a major race. Arno had been the timekeeper for races in the Outer Rim. He was known for a certain, casualness when it came to scorekeeping.
How could he pass scrutiny? Ciri wondered. The timers and judges are screened very closely.
That was just my question, Flea said, nodding. They told me not to worry about it.
That's why you concluded that an insider had to be involved, Obi-Wan said. Flea nodded. You got the false text docs for Daring, Obi-Wan guessed. Why did he suddenly want to get off-planet? Flea fingered one of his long ears.
I had an appointment to drop the text docs off to Arno right after the swoop race. As soon as you left, I went to his quarters and waited for him. He was in a big hurry to leave Yusaron, and I asked him why. He said if I knew what was good for me, I'd leave too. Of course, I had to pressure him. I withheld the text docs until he told me. He thought he had been hired just to fix the events. But then he found out something else. Something's going to happen during an event. Something will go wrong. They want people to get killed during an event so that the senators will be blamed.
Which event? Obi-Wan asked.
I don't know,
Flea admitted.
Arno didn't tell me. He found out by mistake. He was afraid they would come after him because he knew.
Who are they? Ciri barked in frustration. Obi-Wan, Ciri, and Rai Gaul turned toward the door at the same instant. A surge in the Force had warned them. At the same time, the sound of heavy rolling could be heard in the corridor outside Flea's room.
Hey, I'm over here, guys,
Flea said.
Are you going?
Before Flea could finish the word, the door blasted apart, and a squad of droidicas appeared in the smoldering opening. Flea dived behind the sleep couch as the Jedi ignited their lightsabers. The droidicas unfurled and snapped into attack position, blaster bolts firing. The air filled with smoke as the blaster bolts zinged, but the Jedi deflected them and struck blow after blow at the heavy armor plates on the droids. After a sweep from Ciri's lightsaber, one droidica smoked and fell, and another, its legs gone, bobbled and spun until it crashed against the wall. Obi-Wan sliced the droidica in two and sent one piece flying over the sleep couch and crashing into the wall. Flea shrieked as pieces of hot metal rained down on him. Droidicas had control centers, not brains. They could not feel fear or apprehension. The amazing skill of the Jedi was lost on them. They continued to advance and fire, continued to evade by rolling themselves into balls and repositioning themselves to fire again. Time after time they attacked, and time after time the Jedi struck blow after blow until the harsh smoke and the heat caused Flea to have a coughing fit. Suddenly, all three Jedi exchanged a glance. They leaped back as the flimsy wall collapsed on the remaining droidicas. Rygall, Obi-Wan, and Ciri finished the rest off, disabling them with lightsaber thrusts. At last, the droidicas lay around them in pieces. Flea raised his head from behind the sleep couch. His voice was hoarse.
Can I go now?
He can't help us, Obi-Wan told the others. He's told us everything he knows. He deactivated his lightsaber. Yes, Flea, you can go.
Until next time, Obi-Wan,
Flea said fervently. With a last bow, Flea ran from the room, his belongings trailing from his packing case. If they're sending destroyer droids, they must be worried, Ciri said, whoever they are. One of us should attend each event, Obi-Wan said. The Padawans are already at the pod race, and it's scheduled to begin in 15 minutes. Can you head out there, Rygall? Rygall gave a short nod and left the room, stepping over a pile of droidicas in the doorway. I'll take the bowcaster skill contest, Ciri said. It's at Stadium 7. That leaves me with the obstacle course, Obi-Wan said, nodding. Stay in touch. Obi-Wan strode into the stadium. He felt the heat and the noise of a crowd eager for the event to begin. As the Ysuron hero and record setter for the event in the last Galactic Games, Maxo Vista was here as well. Obi-Wan found a seat as close to the judges as he could and watched on a view screen overhead while Vista's podium zoomed to the center of the stadium.
Welcome all, he said, his voice amplified throughout the stadium. I'd like to introduce myself. I am
Maxo Vista, the crowd roared.
You may not remember me,
the crowd roared once again.
But I was at this event 7 years ago.
A cheer went up.
I didn't do too badly.
Vista paused and waited for the cheers and laughter.
And I truly hope that today my record will be broken. I'm just a Galactic Games official now. 7 years older and 7 years slower. So I'd better make way for the next generation of athletes.
The broad grin still on his face, Vista suddenly vaulted off the platform. The crowd gasped, but a cable launcher hidden in Vista's belt let out a long line, and he bounced at the end of it, only centimeters away from the ground. With a powerful thrust, he flipped his body upward, then twisted, flew through the air, and landed on his feet. His movements were so graceful, it was more like a dance than an athletic feat. The crowd erupted in cheers and applause. The cheers went on and on. The cheers fell away for Obi-Wan. He heard only the absence of sound, the silence of concentration and revelation. The lines of Vista's body were suddenly familiar. The fluid, powerful way he moved. Maxo Vista was the air taxi pilot who had tried to kill them. And he was the speeder driver who had run down Arno Daring. Which meant that the great hero of Ysuron was the insider who was behind fixing the games. It was his fault. If he hadn't been so irritated at not knowing who Maxo Vista was, he would have looked closer at him. Perception comes from not one, but all angles at once. Yes, Qui-Gon. Obi-Wan raced down the moving walkway that circled the stadium. He had to make it down to level 20, where Maxo Vista would enter the VIP box. He was almost at the door of the box when Astri dashed toward him, curls bouncing and robe swirling.
Obi-Wan!
Later, he said tersely, striding toward the door. She grabbed his arm.
You must know this. The pod race. Something terrible is going to happen.
He half turned and searched her dark eyes. How do you know this?
Bog, she said. He went to Maxo Vista to tell him what you had discovered.
Obi-Wan almost groaned aloud.
Vista wasn't there, and so Bog accessed his data pad. He thought as a fellow council member he could do this.
Her hand to her throat, Astri got the words out fast between her panting breaths.
And discovered that the pod race is not only fixed, but booby-trapped. The nav computer will lead the pod racers close to the city's hub. The lead pod racer will get taken over by the nav computer. It will be made to crash into the crowd. Bog is going to tell Liviane Sarno, but I came to you.
Does Vista know about this? Obi-Wan reached for his comlink as he asked the question.
I didn't, but now I do.
Vista's voice came from behind him. He smiled as Obi-Wan turned. I promise you, I can explain everything. This way, Obi-Wan. Maxo Vista had a blaster pointed at Astri, but the friendly grin was still on his face. Astri could not see the blaster, which was on his other side. Obi-Wan stepped inside. The floor moved under his feet. He realized that he had not stepped out into the VIP box, but onto a moving podium. It suddenly zoomed to the center of the stadium. Vista's hand dropped, and the blaster was lost in the folds of his cloak.
It is a long-range model, and it is still pointed at Astri, he said pleasantly.
Light suddenly hit Obi-Wan's eyes, dazzling him for a moment.
Welcome to the exhibition match.
Maxo Vista's voice was amplified throughout the stadium.
Jedi against athlete. Let the event begin.
The crowd roared. A cube of white light settled over Obi-Wan. Another flashed over Maxo Vista. A holographic image of a Triton, a wild creature from the planet Isolian, appeared in front of them. On the tip of one pointed ear, a green laser glowed. His snarl was amplified and echoed through the stadium. An announcer's steady voice boomed over the stadium.
10 seconds. Contestants, prepare.
Obi-Wan judged the distance back to the stadium. It was too far. The podium was too high for even a cable launcher. He was trapped. And Anakin was just about to begin the pod race.
Welcome to my world, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Maxo Vista whispered. I had a feeling the Jedi would show up, so I've been planning this.
5 seconds, contestants.
A lightweight weapon emerged out of the platform floor in front of Obi-Wan. He grabbed it. At the tip was a green laser. Obi-Wan guessed that in order to score points, he would have to hit the laser on the hologram with the laser tip of his weapon.
Begin,
the announcer said. The Triton rushed forward. Maxo Vista was prepared. He charged ahead and slashed at the Triton, even as it zoomed upward and around in a crazy evasive dance that no bulky Triton would ever accomplish. Vista hit the creature precisely in the ear, and a loud, joyful resounded through the stadium.
Point Vista!
The stadium erupted in cheers for the favorite. Obi-Wan's laser tip now glowed pink. The edge of the platform elongated into a ramp that rose almost straight upward. Vista began to bound ahead. After a second of hesitation, Obi-Wan followed. Obi-Wan gained on Vista easily. At the top of the ramp, 6 snarling holographic necks sat guard. At the center of their collars, a laser glowed like a pink jewel. Now Obi-Wan knew that he had to hit each of the creatures precisely with the tip of his weapon, laser to laser, in order to progress. Vista sprang forward as the neck on the far left lunged, teeth bared. Vista twisted, but the holographic teeth grazed his ankle. A harsh buzzer sounded.
-0.5.
Obi-Wan somersaulted, avoiding the 2 necks who flew at him. He used the weapon like a lightsaber, touching the collars lightly. And he whirled and touched the other collars just as delicately, even as Vista was moving toward them. The necks dissolved in a shower of light.
6 points, visitor!
This time, the cheers were not nearly as deafening. The laser shifted to blue. Ahead was a cliff face, with shallow ledges forming a pathway upward. At the top were 3 multi-clawed raven screechers, large birds from the Outer Rim planet Wixdom. Each had a large wingspan and 6 legs with claws 0.5 meter long. Instead of an eye, a bright blue laser spot winked at Obi-Wan from each bird. Vista hurled himself at the cliff and began to climb. Obi-Wan followed. Vista reached out a leg and tried to kick him.
Yes, you are a record holder, Obi-Wan thought, but you've never competed against the Jedi.
Accessing the Force, he vaulted into the air, bypassing Vista and landing on a ledge close to the edge. The raven screechers took off, diving toward him. While the crowd roared and cheered, Obi-Wan held on with only one hand. He slashed at one holographic bird, touching its eye and gaining a point, then hit the next one on a backswing without even turning. Using the momentum, he swung himself up to the top of the cliff and hit the third one as it rose to attack him. The points rang up on the screen. His laser tip flashed yellow. Now more of the crowd was on his side, and Maxo Vista was furious. On top of the ledge sat two swoops. Obi-Wan was about to spring forward when a tentacle bush appeared, its branches reaching out for him. It took him a moment to locate the tiny glowing tip of the yellow laser in the heart of the bush. If one of the other branches hit him, he would lose points. He could feel Vista behind him and was not surprised when the man launched himself at the bush. The branches moved like the arms of dancers, fluid and graceful, yet lethal in their striking motions. In his fury, Vista tried to attack the bush with stabbing motions, but the waving branches kept him just out of reach. Obi-Wan leaped. He somersaulted in midair, keeping his legs tucked close to his body to avoid the waving branches. When he was dead center over the bush, he reached down amid the cluster of wildly waving branches and touched the glowing laser with his weapon. Then he landed precisely on one of the swoops, legs astride, and took off. The whole operation had taken less than 3 seconds.
Point, visitor!
The crowd went wild. Obi-Wan did not think about what was behind him. Ahead were glowing circles of light. Holographic humming peepers twittered overhead. Each held a tiny violet laser in its beak. He did not look behind him, but he knew Maxo Vista was pushing his swoop to maximum speed. Obi-Wan dived through the first hoop and delicately touched the tiny bird with his weapon. The clanging noise sounded, then sounded again a second later. Vista, too, had scored a point. Vista piloted the swoop as if it were part of his body. He leaned over and scored another point, then flipped the swoop to quickly zoom through a circle. The crowd kept up a steady roar now. Vista pushed his swoop, aiming for the back of Obi-Wan's. He bumped Obi-Wan's swoop, but it appeared he was only attempting to get through the next loop. Obi-Wan knew better. Obi-Wan zigzagged through the air of the stadium, sailing through the loops and hitting the laser targets. Soon, the humming peepers had all been hit. The stadium went black. Obi-Wan immediately pulled back on the swoop's power and hovered in the air, waiting. Below, on the mid-level landing platform, a group of holographic gladiator droids appeared. Bright orange erupted from flame projectors in their fists. A bright red laser winked in the center of their foreheads. Obi-Wan flew down to the landing platform and leaped off the swoop. The gladiator droid shot blaster fire at him, just harmless points of light. He could not use the race weapon or his lightsaber against light, so he had to dodge the flames and blaster bolts. Obi-Wan got close enough to one gladiator droid to score a point. Vista scored another. Obi-Wan could feel the force around him and feel the ripples of disturbance. Even as he dodged the light and moved in to strike another blow at a gladiator droid, he knew what was coming. One of the droids was real. Obi-Wan had to use the Force. He noted now that Maxo Vista was pretending to be slow, keeping Obi-Wan between him and the fire. He saw a gladiator droid well behind the others, its blasters firing. That was the one. He unsheathed his lightsaber. With his lightsaber in one hand and his event weapon in the other, he leaped. With one hand, he hit each laser target on each droid, twisting and hanging in midair. With the other, he deflected the real blaster fire. He ended with a midair somersault and sank his lightsaber into the real droid's control panel. The counter rang furiously. The scoreboard lit up. The crowd was on its feet now, stamping its approval. The lights in the stadium came up. Maxo Vista raised his head from his position, crouching on the floor. He blinked, surprised to hear the boos directed at him. The crowd screamed for the Jedi. But Obi-Wan had disappeared. Dobby and Deland paced nervously by the pod racer.
"Maybe we should check the intake valves again," Dobby said.
We've checked them 3 times, Anakin said. Everything is fine. We're ready to go. He was strapped into his seat, his goggles pushed up on his head. Rygall approached Anakin.
You must use the Force to stay ahead. There is darkness here, but I cannot locate it.
It was the longest speech Anakin had ever heard Rygall give. Anakin nodded. I feel it too. True waved at him from the sidelines.
Start your engines, the race official called.
Anakin engaged his engines. They roared to life. Rygall's mouth moved, but he couldn't hear the words. It didn't matter. He knew what Rygall had said. May the Force be with you. The noise of the powerful engines of 8 pod racers was deafening. Besides himself, Hecula, and Aldar Bido, Anakin recognized Gasgano, Elan Mac, and Odie Mandrell. The last 2 pod racers were Scorch Zanalis, Ademlo, and Will Neelumph, heir to the first great Tatooine pod racer, Ben Neelumph. Anakin kept his eye on the starting light. It turned from red to yellow, green. Anakin pushed the throttle, and the engines roared in response. He had always believed in a quick start. His old pod racer had been tweaked to allow for maximum fuel flow. Deelan's pod racer surged forward in a pack with the others, but slightly ahead. Anakin checked the nav computer. In a glance, he saw the route ahead. Down a long underground canyon, then through a series of dips and rolls. Then he needed to take a sharp left down a narrow passage. After that, he would receive the next stage of the course. The cave walls were a blur of dusty red, and the screaming engines were just a backdrop of constant sound as Anakin raced through the canyon. Hecula pulled ahead, the double engines of Anakin's old pod bobbing on the air current created by his speed. Anakin stayed close on Hecula's tail, avoiding the flying engines. The dips were ahead. Anakin pulled back suddenly, and Hecula shot in front. Anakin dived, timing his movement so that he was able to barely scoot underneath Hecula's pod racer and then rise up before the dip rose into a small hill. He was in the lead, but Hecula had the next part of the course by now. Anakin would have to rely on his instincts to keep him in the lead. Hecula was pulling slightly to the left. Anakin didn't know why, but guessed he was preparing to pass him on the next segment, whatever it was. Just then, the nav computer blinked, showing him the next part of the course. He just had time to register the details, but it was as though he had already seen the track. He turned sharply in the first corner, then turned again to the left, then the right. Hecula kept up with his every move. The control shook in his hand at the constant turns. Hecula was gaining. He needed all his concentration for the next segment. His comlink signaled. Anakin considered not answering it, but he knew he must. It could be his master. He released the control for an instant and pressed the activation key. He strained to hear his master over the noise.
One of the pod racers is booby-trapped with... The nav computer will lead towards Eusebius. The lead pod racer's steering mechanism will blow. It will be made to crash into a crowd, killing... Can you hear me, Anakin?
Copy that, Anakin shouted. He threw the comlink back down. The lapse in concentration had cost him. As his pod racer burst out of the maze, Hecula passed him on the inside and took the lead. His nav computer flashed. The course now would wind through a series of turns, then open out into a large tunnel. Then the 5 remaining pod racers would burst out of the tunnel onto the city streets. So Obi-Wan's prediction was right. Anakin quickly turned to the left before the cave wall curved. He was able to pass Hecula easily. Obviously, Hecula was not as adept a racer as his father. With advanced knowledge of that turn, he should have hugged the wall to prevent Anakin's maneuver. Anakin raced through the tunnel, wondering what to do when he reached the city streets. If he slowed, the others would pass him and there would be more danger to the pedestrians. The best he could do was stay ahead, to lead the pack away from pedestrians and hope he could master the pod racer when its steering blew. As Anakin zoomed onto the streets, he saw astonished faces and beings quickly running to get out of the way. The next segment flashed on screen. Down a boulevard, then up a steep hill, and down the other side. The turn onto the boulevard would be tricky, a near 180-degree maneuver. When the turn appeared, Anakin took it easily, but Hakula had to struggle to keep his pod racer on course. Engines screaming, they raced up the hill. Speeders accelerated to get out of their way, and pedestrians scattered. Anakin's hands began to shake, and he realized that his controls were vibrating. His warning light suddenly flashed red. The steering mechanism was failing. Obi-Wan had run off the edge of the platform and made a mid-air leap into the box of surprised VIP spectators. Then he dashed out into the stadium hall and was met by Siri. "Not much excitement at the bowcaster skill event, so I thought I'd see how you were doing," she said. "I didn't realize you'd be competing." Obi-Wan made the call to Anakin, warning him about the steering mechanism. "We have to get down there." "Where?" Siri pointed out. "Nobody knows the track." "Maxo Vista does." They raced down to the exiting area, where Maxo Vista was hurrying off in disgrace. When he saw the Jedi, he tried to flee, but Siri took three strides forward and pinned him to a wall. "Not so fast," she said. "I don't have anything to say." Maxo Vista's eyes burned with hatred for Obi-Wan. Siri reached into Vista's tunic pocket. She tossed the datapad to Obi-Wan, and he quickly accessed Vista's files. "Here," Obi-Wan said. "Here is the route. The steering mechanism will fail after the hill." "Does it say which pod racer will be affected?" Siri asked. "No." Even as he was speaking, he was contacting Anakin. "After the steep hill," he said quickly into his comlink. "The steering mech."
"I know,"
Anakin shouted.
"It's mine. I can't."
Anakin's words were drowned out by a loud crash, and the comlink went dead. The crash occurred between Gazgano and Zanalis, who had been closely tailing Anakin and Hakula. Anakin did not look back to make sure that no one was hurt. He was too busy trying to bypass the steering mechanism. He was controlling the pod racer through the engines now, just managing to keep it on course. Hakula had zoomed ahead. A crowd of spectators stood in a corner ahead, right after a sharp curve. Anakin saw clearly that he could not control the pod racer on that turn. There was only one thing to do. He shut off the nav computer to send the energy to the engines. He would have to rely on the Force. Immediately, the steering hummed with power again. He pushed the engines and in a burst of speed made the turn and cut Hakula off. He was in the lead again. Slowing his speed just a fraction, he glanced in his rearview mirror. Hakula was going to attempt to pass him. Anakin would allow him to do so. He'd need to follow Hakula now. He had to let Hakula guide him to the finish line, then find a way to get ahead. His first objective was to protect the spectators, but Anakin had not forgotten for a moment that he meant to win. "I'm sure he is all right, but you might as well go to the finish line," Siri said. "I'll stay with Vista." "Bring him to the ruling power," Obi-Wan said. Obi-Wan hurried out of the stadium. Astri was waiting outside, her eyes searching the crowd anxiously. She handed him a small view screen. Obi-Wan could see the three pod racers roaring through the streets of Eusebius. "They're selling these on the streets," she said. "Anakin seemed to have trouble, but he's in second place now." Obi-Wan nodded, taking the view screen and jumping into the speeder. Obi-Wan took off. His comlink signaled and he answered it.
"I have information for you on those senators,"
Jocasta New said.
"They aren't on a committee together, but they have all taken the same position on the same issue. The Commerce Guild is proposing legislation that would give them control of banking practices in the core worlds. It is an enormously profitable contract."
"Do the senators oppose it?"
"Of course. It's a terrible idea to consolidate power that way. The vote will be close, but the list of senators you gave me have sworn to block it."
"Are the ruling power of Ysseron involved?"
"No, but don't you want to know who's a member of the Commerce Guild?"
"Maxo Vista?"
"Indeed,"
Jocasta New said, sounding disappointed that Obi-Wan had guessed.
"He was recently invited to join. Do you know who proposed his candidacy?"
"No, and I don't have time to guess."
"Liviani Sano."
Obi-Wan let out a breath. so his worst suspicions were true. The treachery had begun at the top. He ended the communication and concentrated on getting to the finish line as fast as he could. Obi-Wan was almost at the caves now. It was strange how he had pulled a thread and the plot had come undone. Dee Dee's bet had led to a web of treachery. It never failed to surprise him just a little how far beings would go to advance their interests, how much they would risk for an easy gain. Together, Liviani Sarno and Maxo Vista had wealth and prestige, yet it was not enough. And poor Arno Daring, just a petty criminal with nothing to lose except his life. Obi-Wan thought back on his few possessions, his neat quarters. Obi-Wan thought back on the two chronos set for morning. Daring must have been good at his job. He knew the importance of backup. He knew the importance of backup. Obi-Wan grabbed the screen and peered at it as he drove. Anakin was staying close to the rear of Hercules' pod racer. He tried to contact him on his comlink, but Anakin did not answer. Answer it, Padawan. You know it is me. Obi-Wan contacted Rygol. Something else is going to happen to Anakin's pod racer.
The Force is still disturbed,
Rygol agreed. Where are the most spectators?
At the finish line. I am there.
That's where it will happen. I'll be there soon. Obi-Wan pushed the engine to maximum. He remembered exactly where the cave entrance was and barely reduced speed as he crashed through the branches and slid into the tunnel. He halted the speeder in the pit hangar. He spotted Dobie and Deland.
He's still second, Dobie fretted. He's not going to win. And it looked like he almost crashed. I don't understand this.
All we can do is wait, Deland said with a glance at his sister.
Rygol, True, and Ferris approached Obi-Wan.
We can do nothing now, Rygol said.
Obi-Wan scanned the crowd. Each being was staring intently at a view screen. There had to be someone who would activate the backup system by hand. One being sat alone. A plain brown robe swept down to the floor. A hood hid a face bent intently over a view screen. Then a hand moved to reach inside the robe toward a pocket. A data pad appeared. In that brief moment, Obi-Wan glimpsed a robe underneath the plain brown cloak. The color was brilliant scarlet, and the thick Vita cloth was embroidered with orange sept silk thread. Obi-Wan took off. He hurled over some pit droids coiling a lubrication hose and avoided a disabled pod racer being wheeled into a transport. He knew even as he ran that he was too late. His throat constricted with pain. Liviani Sarno touched the screen on her data pad, then slipped it back into a pocket. She quickly rose and jumped to the floor, hurrying away from the stands. Obi-Wan strode forward and put his hand on Sarno's arm. She looked up at him, surprised, and for a moment, frightened.
I'll take that data pad, he said.
What are you doing?
Liviani hissed.
I'm here undercover. I'm observing. Go away.
What did you just do?
Let me go!
Liviani screamed, her eyes wide with fear.
It is up to you now, Anakin. I failed to stop her. I cannot help you. There is only the living Force.
Anakin was on the straightaway, but he knew his steering had failed completely as soon as it happened. He knew his braking system had shorted as well. This time, the problem would not be easy to fix. It had not happened through the nav computer. He flipped switch after switch, but some kind of override had been programmed into his pod racer. The turn was ahead. He was still hugging Hercules' tail. He had been preparing to make his move and pass him just before the turn. Now he knew he'd never make it. Instead, the pod racer would not turn. It would go out of control and crash into the stands. He felt the Force around him and in him. In moments like this, Anakin felt capable of anything. There was only one thing to do, and he knew it. He saw the steps ahead that he needed to take. He made his move. He slammed himself against the side of the pod racer and pushed the engine so that he maneuvered close to the left side of the tunnel wall. Then he accelerated and came up neck and neck with Hercules on his right. Hercules shot him an incredulous glance. It was as though Anakin was inside his mind. Hecula could take the opportunity to make one quick swipe, forcing him against the cave wall, and Anakin would be a fireball in seconds. But if Hecula did that, Neelumph, who was close behind them, would swing out to the right and no doubt win the race. Revenge or victory? Anakin had bet on the answer. Hecula did not turn his pod racer to sideswipe Anakin. Instead, he began the turn. Victory was too close for him to take the chance. The spectators gasped as the two pod racers rounded the left curve, seemingly one connected beast. The flat straightaway was ahead, the finish line crowded with the pod racer teams and spectators who had risked the anger of pod racer security and jumped out of the stands. Anakin pushed the speed, passing Hecula. Then he cut the power and slammed all his weight to one side. His pod racer began to spin. He crossed the finish line, spinning so wildly that neither Hecula or Neelumph could pass him. The pod racer came to a slow stop. At first, Anakin could not hear the cheers over the ringing in his ears. He had won. And no one was dead. Suddenly, he felt very tired. He saw the faces as a blur. Liviani Sarno looking strangely pale, his master looking grave but relieved, and Sebulba snarling at him, waving his arms and crying foul. Hot anger spilled through Anakin. He threw off his goggles and vaulted out of the pod racer. You, he thundered at Hecula and Sebulba. You're the cheats. The red mist he had come to recognize as rage filled his vision, driving out the memory of the clarity of the Force.
Slave boy, you have to cheat to win. There's no mother watching this time to disapprove.
Anakin reached down for his lightsaber, but a strong hand closed over his. No, Padawan. Obi-Wan's voice reached him as if from a long distance.
He did it.
Anakin struggled to keep the rage away. He pictured the red mist leaving him, floating over a distant hill. He deserves to be punished.
No.
Obi-Wan's voice was stronger still. He drew Anakin away. Listen to me, Padawan. Sebulba did not cheat. It was Dobby and Deland. Anakin blinked. He could not absorb the words. It was... They made a deal with Maxo Vista, Obi-Wan said. They would have advanced knowledge of the pod race track. What they didn't know was that Vista was going to sabotage the pod racer. He wanted a fireball, a tremendous accident to occur. That means that I was getting advanced track information, not Hecula, Anakin said slowly. It wasn't just the Force. That explained Hecula's sometimes puzzling failure to get ahead. He looked around. Where are they? They've disappeared with Jella, Obi-Wan said. I am sure they did it to save their sister. The mist in Anakin's head cleared. He took a breath and looked around. Ferris Olin was watching him, as he always was, his dark eyes gleaming with secret knowledge, as if he had glimpsed the red mist that was Anakin's rage. Nothing was as he thought it would be. He felt his legs trembling. He had almost lost control in front of his fellow Padawans and two Jedi Masters. He had come so close. Nothing has turned out as I thought, Anakin said. I was here to work on my Jedi lesson of connection to the living Force. If that is true, I failed. I judged everyone wrong. I didn't see that Dobby and Deland were using me. I trusted my instincts and they betrayed me. Do not judge yourself so harshly, Padawan, Obi-Wan said. Your mistake was one of the heart. You allowed your emotion to cloud your instincts. You allowed what your heart wanted to be true to make it true. Connections to other beings, good and bad, must be pure and free of one's own desires. You wanted Sebulba to be the culprit, so you made him one. I thought my connection to the living Force was clear, and it's not at all, Anakin said moodily. I have such a long way to go. If it makes you feel better, I made the same mistake with Maxo Vista, Obi-Wan said. Jedi lessons are learned by masters as well as Padawans.
Wisdom comes with time and missions, Anakin said, repeating Obi-Wan's own words. Obi-Wan smiled gently. And mistakes, he said.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Jedi Quest III: The Dangerous Games by Jude Watson. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Jedi Quest III: The Dangerous Games is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2003. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music Master Production, copyright 2003, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.